Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Senate Minority Whip John Thune, who joins us to discuss the Farm Bill timing and policy pictures. But first, here's this week's headlines. Much of the nation's farm policy has lapsed. The 2018 Farm Bill expired on September 30th, and some programs are no longer authorized until a new bill is passed or the 2018 law is extended. The lapse in policy has happened before, including in 2018. September 30th may have been the deadline for many existing programs, but a more pressing timeline for action is the end of the year to prevent Depression-era permanent law from kicking in. Meanwhile, farmers are feeling less optimistic about the economy for the second straight month, according to the most recent Ag Economy Barometer from Purdue University and the CME Group. Measurements of the expectation for current and future conditions both declined in the most recent survey. Producers say they are worried about lower crop prices, higher production costs, and high interest rates. And finally, Tuesday brought a historic first on Capitol Hill as Kevin McCarthy was voted out as Speaker of the House. Eight Republicans, led by Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz and the chamber's Democrats, voted to vacate the Speaker's chair in a 216-210 vote. McCarthy says he will not seek another term in the role. The move came days after McCarthy brought forward a continuing resolution to keep the government funded until mid-November. The decision avoided a government shutdown after the measure cleared both chambers of Capitol Hill and was signed into law. But Gaetz began discussing a push for McCarthy's ouster soon after. The House now stands without a speaker, leaving the chamber unable to consider spending bills or any other legislation. In the Senate, South Dakota Republican John Thune is the number two member of the GOP conference. He says work is underway to avoid that mid-November shutdown, and the reality of that possibility could spur action then as well.
It seems like, and what happened on and this with respect to the potential shutdown on October 1 or September 30, that, you know, there was just enough sense of urgency toward the end that we can't let this happen, and everybody kind of came together. I hope that happens again a few weeks from now, but we are facing yet another, the specter of another deadline, which is going to make it even more necessary and should compel people to want to avoid that by starting to move the normal appropriations process to get these bills enacted. And hopefully that next time it'll be a little easier lift than it was this time.
So considering some of the crisis situations that are unfolding right now over in the House, they've got the speaker upheaval right now over in the Senate. Again, things kind of take time on that front. Still a funding debate to be sorted through there. Not to mention the fact that 2024 being an election year, at what point do you think a farm bill in this Congress is no longer a feasible idea?
You know, I'm optimistic and hopeful as always, but I do think that, you know, we now have the calendar year. We missed the fiscal year, which was September 30th, which is when the current Farm Bill expires. We're operating kind of now on borrowed time, but I think we will have to do some sort of extension at the end of the calendar year if a Farm Bill hasn't passed. And I mean, I think right now that could be a very real possibility that we have to do some sort of an extension. There doesn't seem to be an agreement among Republicans and Democrats on the committee about priorities. The chair, Debbie Stabenow, now the senator from Michigan, has indicated that she doesn't want to use any of the funds that were allocated during the so-called Inflation Reduction Act last summer, about $20 billion in the commodity title of the bill. And, you know, our members argue that you got to put more farm in the farm bill. The commodity title is the part that deals with farmers. At some point, she's going to have to commit to working with Republicans on dealing with the crop insurance program, the ARC program, the PLC program, the safety net provisions in the commodity title, which is where most of our members want, you know, the attention focused. So until there comes a better meeting of the minds, which at the moment I'm not seeing, I think we could be, you know, a short-term extension or some sort of extension of the existing bill could be in store for us unless she's willing to come around on that.
Well, you lead me into my next question. If you'll indulge the hypothetical conversation of an extension at the end of the year, what do you think the time frame on that looks like? Is it short term to move something in early 24? Is it a longer term to get you past the elections?
Well, there's an inherent incentive and motivation for the Democrats who control the Senate right now to get an outcome on the farm bill. So I would hope that any extension would be short term and that there would be more of a sense of urgency. But, you know, we haven't seen that out of them yet. There's no evidence that there's any intention of scheduling a markup or, for that matter, as I said, any evidence that the chair wants to put more farm in the farm bill and actually focus on farmers and ranchers and, instead of all this other stuff that has become now kind of the priority for a lot of the Democrats here in the Senate. It's in everybody's interest to get a farm bill done. You know, I've been around this a long time. This is my fifth farm bill. I've seen lots of extensions, some for as long as a year. But that's never the best way to do it. It's always advantageous to try and get the new policy in place, modernize and update from the last one. Lots changed in the last 4 or 5 years in agriculture, and we need to have a policy that reflects that for our farmers and ranchers.
We'll have more from Senator Thune right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Senate Minority Whip John Thune says he's supportive of the idea to bring Inflation Reduction Act conservation funding into the Farm Bill's baseline, but he differs with his Democratic colleagues on how that money should be spent.
I think that $20 billion, they kind of squirreled it away. It's like this little, pet fund, I think, that they had in place that they just wanted to do climate stuff with. Well, they're doing a ton of climate stuff anyway. I'd plug it back into the commodity title of the bill if they want to fold some of the conservation money there into the conservation title of the farm bill and the programs that we know work for farmers and ranchers, fine. But, you know, again, sort of trying to put aside all that money for their undefined sort of vague climate agenda, to me, is completely missing the point. And they've got to come around on that.
If we can get a little bit in the weeds here, Senator, a lot of folks looking to improve the producer safety net in this next farm bill, and a lot of people in your home state of South Dakota are suggesting perhaps updating base acres could be a way to do that. But we've seen some analysis from the GOP committee staff that suggests that might be something that, in their terms, might pit farmers against farmers. Is a base acre update something that is politically feasible as a way to improve the producer safety net in this next farm bill?
Well, I mean, I think what we need to do on base acres and again is kind of align the risks associated with planting certain crops with the payments that come. And I think right now there's just been a decoupling almost, if you will. You've got so many farming areas around the country, regions around the country that are no longer planting certain crops that still get payments because they still got base acres allocated. And then you've got places like in the Dakotas where we've increased production in certain areas. And so farmers have all these planted acres now. They use soybeans as an example or corn and can't get the payments don't align with the actual risk taken by farmers because this antiquated base acre system that we have. So yes, I propose changing it. I propose changing it in the last farm bill. But I do understand how it impacts across the country and that in farm bills, you have to try and find the sort of sweet spot, if you will, between different regions of the country and how these policies distribute or play out. That's going to be a very heavy lift. I know I've talked to the ranking Republican on Senator Bozeman about it, others on the Democrat side who are very opposed to it. certainly would benefit a state like South Dakota, which is why I continue to put it into the equation.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Senator Bozeman. I want to wrap up with a comment he's made repeatedly, including on this program, saying that he's not willing to vote for a farm bill that doesn't improve the producer safety net. He said that many times. That's his position. What's yours?
I agree with him on that. I think we're in the same place. And I think for that matter, pretty much every Republican on the committee is very interested in a farm bill that actually is about farmers and ranchers and about production agriculture. Ultimately, farm bills should be about farmers and ranchers. It should be about creating certainty and predictability with respect to the policies so they have the right incentives, to plant, do what they want to do, which maximizes their return. That's why I think it's important that we get a farm bill in place so at least they know what the rules are that they're going to be playing by in a time when you've got this kind of uncertainty.
Well, those rules, as you mentioned, expired recently and now on borrowed time on Capitol Hill, looking to get a new farm bill. We'll keep a close eye on how that process is unfolding. But for now, Senator Thune, thanks for joining us.
Always good to be with you. Thanks, Spencer.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Hannah Pegel walks us through the spending in a major conservation program in this week's Map It Out.
The Conservation Reserve Program is one of the largest private lands conservation efforts in the country. Farmers and landowners voluntarily agree to pull environmentally sensitive land from agricultural production in exchange for a payment from the government. This map shows the total CRP payments distributed in each state from fiscal years 2018 to 2022. Producers in Iowa received nearly $2 billion, which comes out to about 22% of all payments. Producers in Illinois, Minnesota, and South Dakota all received more than $500 million. All told, nearly $9 billion in payments were distributed during this time. CRP is a major conservation program, but it was not included in the list of initiatives given additional funding through the Inflation Reduction Act, leaving the upcoming Farm Bill as a possible way to boost the program's budget. It's also important to note that CRP was one of the programs that expired at the September 30th Farm Bill deadline. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who mapped the soybean genome? You did. Who's replacing the petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who created biodiesel that increased your income 63 cents per bushel? You again. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff, moving soy forward, moving you forward.
At Clean Fuels Alliance America, we're working toward a future of clean energy now that will make our members proud. We serve as the clean fuels industry's primary organization for technical, environmental, and quality assurance programs, and are the strongest voice for its advocacy, communications, and market development. With industry-leading programs and incentives, Clean Fuels Alliance America is actively moving the clean fuels industry forward toward a brighter future.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we're going to have a panel discussion discussing the week that was here in Washington, D.C., and trying to digest some of that news and how it will impact farm policy. Joined for that conversation by Sam Kiefer with the American Farm Bureau Federation and Bev Paul with Davenport Policy. I appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Sam, I want to go to you first, because obviously the big news that is happening in Washington this week, it relates to the House floor, the removal of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. And I want to kind of zero in on the farm bill implications of that happening. Obviously, formerly Speaker McCarthy from a very heavy agricultural area in California. And as we sit here right now, we don't know for sure who the next speaker will be. But I wonder, the loss of a speaker from such a heavy agricultural area, what do you think would be the farm bill implications of that?
Well, certainly what happened this week is unprecedented. And I think the easiest answer, Spencer, is we don't yet know. We've heard Chair Thompson from the House Ag Committee say numerous times that his district and Mr. McCarthy's district are very similar, just on opposite sides of the continent. While I think it's right now, it's too soon to tell. We need to see what process plays out within the chamber. The loss of Mr. McCarthy will have an implication, but I still think there's time to get things done, provided we don't delay.
Well, and let's talk about that a little bit here, because we've seen that next week is when the speaker vote will be, expecting that to process to begin on the House floor on Wednesday. And time will tell whether that process will conclude on Wednesday or if they're going to go through what they went through in January with many, many votes. But with so much upheaval in the House of Representatives, with really, you know, a lot of concern in the Senate over whether or not folks are on the same page there, I wonder, is it better for the ag community in D.C. and across the country at this point to continue for a push for a farm bill in 23 or maybe pivot toward encouraging an extension at a certain point in time?
The 2018 was not a bad farm bill. I mean, it's good policy, but we've heard from our folks, our members all across the country, about several things that need to be improved. And our job has not changed. Our focus and our mission remains the same. We are still committed to working to get a farm bill done in 23. The political calculus is not any easier in 24. So what we're waiting to see what happens over the course of the next week. But our mission continues to focus on a farm bill in 23.
So, Bev, I want to bring you into the fold here because we look at the current folks that are, you know, throwing their hat in the ring for the House speakership. Currently, right now, looks like Steve Scalise, the current number two Republican in the House, as well as Jim Jordan, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, are the two folks that appear to have the they're vying for the position at this time from the GOP. I wonder, obviously, two very different people, two very different policies over the course of their career, but you look at some of their vote history, there's some conservative stances in there. Of course, Jordan used to be the chair of the Freedom Caucus. I say all that to ask you, what do you think the speakership of either of them might mean for the upcoming farm bill?
Well, I think it's going to be very tough. It's going to be tough for any Republican speaker of the House. I mean, how do you get 218 votes off of the House floor without bipartisanship? And I think we all have prided ourselves in the agriculture community about being bipartisan and the ag committees being some of the last real bipartisan committees in the Congress. I would love to see the House Ag Committee right now put forward some language that is truly bipartisan and, you know, just say we're going to be bipartisan coming out of committee. We're going to take a bipartisan bill to the floor. That's the only way this is going to happen. What we have seen in the House so far this year is that the speaker's ability is really limited, just given how small the Republican majority is. And the only things that can pass the House of Representatives are truly bipartisan.
We talked farm bill politics. Now we'll talk farm bill policy with our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. A push in the upcoming farm bill to update the nation's base acres is a long-running political debate. And Bev Paul with Davenport Policy says it's a very in-the-weeds conversation as well.
Well, I mean, as long as I've been around agriculture policy, you know, base acres is always turns out to be about the most technical and the most expensive conversation in the farm bill. I mean, frankly, making any changes to the policies that are based on historical base become very expensive and very regional right away. If you are a younger farmer, a veteran farmer, a farmer who is trying to start farming without the benefit of being born into it, it's just very, very difficult.
So I guess as you look at this conversation, Bev, a lot of folks also pursuing an increase to reference prices. I wonder, what role do you think the base acre conversation will ultimately play in that reference price conversation? Obviously, two very different things, but both will be hugely important to the farmer safety net.
Sure. To the farmer safety net for the farmers who are enrolled in that safety net. I mean, let's also remember, and I think it's maybe Chairwoman Stabenow who talks about, and look, I come from a corn and soybean farm in Nebraska, so this is the agriculture system that I am used to. But I understand that the Title I commodity crops are a very small part of American agriculture. And increasingly, we are looking at needing to transform the way that we raise food in this country. But just thinking about the costs, the all of the people who are left out of the current system that we have now, frankly, continuing to have this conversation about, look, if we update base and we've got these cotton acres in California that are going to be disadvantaged, does it really make sense for the long term?
Mm-hmm. So, Sam, I want to wrap up the conversation with you. As we look at the reference price part of the conversation, there's some questions right now over whether or not it is going to be financially viable to raise reference prices across the board. And maybe some specifically targeted commodities could be in line for an increase, but others might not be. Farm Bureau is a general farm organization that, you know, represents producers of all those commodities. So I wonder, how would you all approach that issue? Are reference prices going to need to be increased across the board to garner Farm Bureau support, or would specific targeted increases on certain commodities pass muster?
What we saw this week, there is an appetite, particularly among the House, to bring out the scalpel more extreme or larger devices for cuts. But we remain focused on ensuring that there is an investment in Title I, and we've asked for an increase in reference prices. You know, the reference prices put in place were done in 2012. Farmers across the board, regardless of the commodity, regardless of the region, regardless of the size, are all dealing with that which every American family is dealing with, and that's inflation. And the purchasing power of a 2012 dollar right now is about 74% of what it was back then, and the reference prices just have not kept up. We've asked for Congress to increase reference prices. The big question is going to be, what is the dollar value that the Ag Committee is able to muster up and put in Title I? And I think that's going to determine how those who have the pens allocate those resources.
So the policy and the politics of the Farm Bill have both taken interesting turns over the course of the last couple of weeks. And as we look forward, we will have to see what that will ultimately mean for the legislation that will be sent to the president's desk. Sam and Bev, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Spencer.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pagel introduces us to someone we need to get to know in this week's Meet the Lawmaker.
Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin represents Michigan's 7th District. She is not new to Capitol Hill, but is new to the House Agriculture Committee, where she hopes to advocate for specialty crops and the importance of food security to national security in the upcoming Farm Bill. Prior to running for Congress, she worked for the CIA. She lives on a farm, and her family has deep ties to the agriculture industry, including production of a favorite American product.
When my great-grandfather immigrated to the United States, he started a small meat company that became a bigger meat company. We helped start Nathan's Hot Dogs and do all the meat for Nathan's Hot Dogs for the first 50 years, and then moved the company to Detroit in the 50s, got the first contract to sell hot dogs at Tiger Stadium. That became a popular Detroit favorite, and we turned that into the Ballpark Frank.
Slotkin will also be a name to watch in the future. She is running to fill the seat that will be vacated when Senate Ag Committee Chair and Michigan Democrat Debbie Stabenow retires at the end of 2024. Head to AgriPulse.com to watch Slotkin's full Meet the Lawmaker interview. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who mapped the soybean genome? You did. Who's replacing the petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who created biodiesel that increased your income 63 cents per bushel? You again. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales, you're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff, moving soy forward, moving you forward.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House is expected to convene Wednesday to begin voting for its next speaker. Thursday will bring several key reports, including the next Consumer Price Index from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and new World Agriculture Supply and Demand Estimates and Crop Production Reports from USDA. We'll have all the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.